Hello. 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 Hello.
Welcome to the Karen Conti Show on 720 WGN.
Good evening, everybody, and hope you're enjoying your long Memorial Day weekend and remembering our fallen soldiers. Thank you for your service. We have a good show tonight. We have one of the funniest men ever in the history of the state of Illinois, John DeCoste, who's here.
No, it's me.
It's
No, I'm here. Not John.
Oh, wait a minute. Oh, wait. Is the microphone on? Hold on. You're so funny. John DeCoste is a funny man. He's been a stand-up comic for 30 years. He's opened for Jay Leno, Howie Mandel, and Louis Anderson. Who do you like? Who is your favorite person to open for? What is there a difference between opening for different comedians or different acts? Is there something that you keep in mind when you open for somebody?
Yes, yeah, some of the people you don't get to meet.
Oh.
So there's no point. You're just a person to get it started.
Got it.
And then, you know, whatever. But believe it or not, none of those were my favorite. My favorite was Shania Twain.
And why was she your favorite?
Shania Twain, I opened up at the Polaris Theater in Columbus, 10,000 people. And she talked to me beforehand, sat there on the side as I did my whole act, and then gave me a hug as I came off.
Oh.
So that's pretty cool.
And you really just liked her.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
She's I guess some people would think she's attractive.
Oh, my gosh. You know? She's got it all.
She's what's great.
But, I mean, I wonder, like, do you warm up an audience differently for different acts? Or do you pretty much do your same thing and hope that it warms the crowd up in the same way?
I'm a clean comedian. Mm-hmm. I'm not blue. I just do what I do. I figured they hired me to do what I do. So
right.
That's what I do. You know?
Yeah.
So, but when you're working in a crowd with a crowd that large, you just slow it down and you don't even care. If I get 30% of the audience, I just got 3,000 people to laugh.
Right.
What do I care?
Right.
You know? Plus you they're not there for you anyway. So you have to apologize first and go, my moment will be over. I promise you. I will not take up much of your time. Let's just get through this. And everybody's really good. So.
Well, you're going to hang with me for a couple hours.
Yes.
And you're going to be my sidekick tonight. And we're going to talk about some news stories. We're going to take legal calls at 8 o'clock. But we're also going to be talking to Jan Kemmerling, who is with the Illinois Tourism Bureau, and she's going to be talking about some interesting places to go in Illinois, maybe some things you haven't been to or places you haven't been to in a long time, little ideas for quick road trips depending on whether you like history, photography, drinking wine, climbing in the mountains. We don't have mountains in Illinois, but
Mount
maybe
Prospect.
She can
Mount Prospect.
That's a big mountain.
It is.
But you know what I wanted to talk first? I saw this news story this morning. I don't know if you saw this, John, but it's a 12-year-old Holden Jesseduswich. I can't say his name. Let's just call him Holden. He's 12 years old. His father, David, he and his father have a business called Grave Matters. And what they do is they go to cemeteries, and there's
right.
a few that they frequent, and they fix up the grave sites. They polish the gravestones. They kind of edge the grass around there. They'll put flowers on, or they'll put a Cubs banner
right.
if it's a Cubs fan. And then they take a picture for the family, and the family pays them, I think, was it $25?
$25.
Yeah.
I did see this. And it's a little like moss, not moss. What do they call it? When you put it around trees.
Like edging like a mulch.
Mulch,
like
thank
little
you.
Mulch, yeah.
Little mulch around to give it like an outline, and they clean the stone itself. But how great is that?
I think that's a great idea. I mean, and it's the story I sure came up because it was Memorial Day, and that's a day that people do go to different cemeteries. But, you know, and one of the points they make in there is that a lot of older people can't get down on their hands
yeah.
and knees and plant things, or they can't, so, you know, and they don't want it. They think it's disrespectful to let it
right.
go to waste and to have it look terrible. And, I think it's just a great business.
Yeah, I thought it was so cool that they just started this. They were looking for something to do. And it's like, it's not expensive. $25 to have them come out and do that. And they make it look so nice. They clean the stone, give it like a little, you know, like we took the mulch around the side. Or, as you said, the little sign or the Cubs banner or White Sox banner.
Okay, so let's just say that you're in the ground, okay?
Yeah.
You know, after this show, something really bad happens to you, like, I don't know, Shania Twain hits you with her tour bus, let's say.
Kay.
Okay.
I'm following you.
So now you're in a cemetery, and what would you want on your gravestone. Well, how would you want yours decorated? Would there be something special that you would want so people, you know, could remember you in some particular way? I mean, think about it.
That is a good idea. I know one thing I would like every day somebody to put a bullseye, you know, a caramel cream.
Oh, because you love those.
I love those.
Now, do you chew them up real fast, or do you kind of suck on them and then get to that middle part that's
take my
so
time.
Good?
Take my time. You're absolutely right. And the warmer the day, the better. You leave them in the car, and they get nice and soft, and then you
Why do I picture like a headstone with like a bunch of gooey caramel on it?
That's what mine would be.
That's exactly what yours would be. Well, I like that. I like that a lot, John. When we come back, we're going to be talking about quick road trips, and John, I'm going to hear about some of your favorite road trips.
On the road again, going places that I've never been. Seeing things that I may never see again. I can't wait to get on the road again.
Don't you just love a good road trip? Do you just love a good road trip, John?
Yes.
I just love getting in the car with a cooler full of like Diet Coke and something.
Mountain Dew.
you know my poison. And just not having real, maybe having a destination, but not having a plan.
Yeah.
That's different. Having a destination is good, but not having a plan where you just kind of like let the car go where it's going. You stop at an antique store. You stop someplace. You feel like stopping and you just let it unravel.
I totally agree.
Well, we're going to be talking to someone who knows quite a bit about road trips. Jan Kemmerling is Acting Deputy Director for the Illinois Office of Tourism. With only a brief hiatus, she's been in that position working in that agency for 30 years. She's responsible for the overall management of domestic and international tourism and marketing. Thank you for joining us, Jan.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So people have different thoughts about what they want to do with their time. Let's talk about a few things. Let's just say that you're an athletic person and you like to do something physical at the end of your destination. What would you recommend in Illinois?
I think down in the Shawnee Forest Country in southern Illinois, which is probably about a five-hour drive from Chicago, it is these beautiful sandstone cliffs that you can do rock climbing. So you've got hiking trails. You've got some really good biking trails, horseback riding. So you've got a wealth of activities. But then also, if someone really isn't so active, there's also some other, you know, nature trails, too, that are just beautiful. So we've identified some Instagram-worthy places in Illinois, and three of them are down in the Shawnee Forest Country.
It's so beautiful there, and it's so unlike, you know, the top part of Illinois. Illinois is such a long, narrow state, and I always say, when you get about halfway down, they're serving grits, and it's a whole different world, you know?
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah,
yes.
It's
the food is different.
Yes.
So barbecue, you're going to find different places for that. It's just amazing.
It's great. Okay, so what about, how about scenic towns that maybe we haven't visited? I mean, you know, Berwyn aside. I say that because I'm from Berwyn. But if you're going to go to a destination town in Illinois, what would you recommend for a family?
I think that Galena comes to mind. It's about a three-hour drive from Chicago, but you've got, you know, it's a quaint, small town, charming, but you've also got Chestnut Mountain Resort, which has zip lining. They have the Alpine Slide. You've got Eagle Ridge Resort. So you've got a lot of activities, and they also have zip lining there as well. And they've just opened a new biking trail.
I didn't know that. And, you know, that place is beautiful in the winter as well as,
yep,
obviously, the fall is just gorgeous.
Yes. So you've got the, you know, all-time activities. So now the biking trail, I think, is like a 20-mile trail. They just cut the ribbon on it, so it's ready to go. But you also have kayakers there that you can do kayaking as well. So depending on what you're looking for, but the Jail Hill Inn in Galena has just been named the number one bed and breakfast inn in the United States as well by TripAdvisor's Traveler's Choice Awards. So if you're looking for that romantic getaway, it's also ideal for that.
Could you say the name of that again?
It's the Jail Hill Inn.
And why
it actually
is it
was the jail. It actually was the jail in Galena at one time that someone has turned into these lavish six-room inn suites.
Well, that sounds, yeah. John, would you stay there?
Not only would I stay there. Jan, my wife, here's what I love about traveling in Illinois. It's not far. You know, I mean, everything
right.
can be a day. You can be a day. We have gone, my wife and I love to go, and I'll give you an example. You were talking about Southern Illinois, Bald Knob, which is just south of Alto Pass, or I believe, the Big Cross up on Bald Knob.
Yes.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And then also, right down in that area in Jonesboro, is talking of bed and breakfast, we love to go to the Davies School, which was an old grade school. Do you know what I'm talking about, Jan?
By Davies School Inn, yes. I'm well familiar with it. Yep, I love it.
Okay, every room was a classroom.
Oh.
And you stay in the classroom. And it is, they redid each room, and it's wonderful.
That is absolutely wonderful. Very, very cool. Now, you have something, you gave me a list of some really great places, and I'm going to give people the link to the website and some information that you're going to give us. But Anderson Japanese Gardens in Rockford, this is something that I have never been to. Can you tell our listeners about that?
Oh, yes. So Anderson Japanese Gardens was a private collection where a person's residence, he turned into this beautiful, amazing Japanese gardens. So it's got the koi ponds, it's got all the different, blooms, and whether it's spring, you're going to be seeing different foliage versus when it's in the fall. But it's also a place that you can go and get your zen because they have yoga out on the lawn, they have music concerts. So it's just a very relaxing place that you can spend an afternoon touring through to get away from the rest of stress of your life.
And we can't forget Starved Rock. I mean, there are a lot of people in the Chicago area who've lived in Chicago their whole lives and have never been to Starved Rock.
Yeah.
Tell our listeners what you can expect when you go to Starved Rock.
Oh, Starved Rock, again, is all these canyons and waterfalls, so beautiful nature trails. So you're going to be able to get out and really, especially this time of year, it's very lush. So, but there's also, easy trails for someone who's more like me, or you have some really more difficult trails for people who really want to get out and spend the day on a really hard, hike and climb. So again, it's just getting out with nature. We have beautiful state parks in the state all around, from southern all the way to northern, and just getting out and enjoying some of those. But one of the things coming up I'd like to tell you about in the Starved Rock area in a couple weeks is the Ottawa Two Rivers Wine and Jazz Festival.
Ooh.
And right out there in the Starved Rock area, they're going to have Illinois wine, they're going to have live jazz, and they're going to be serving grilled lobster.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yes, June 7th through 9th, so mark it down.
Lobster brought in from the Des Plaines River. No. I'll never forget. I was
the best.
I was walking on the lakefront. This is a few years back, and some tourists, obvious tourists, are like, do you guys have lobster? I'm like, this is a lake. It's a lake.
It's a lake.
It's a big one, but it's a lake. It's a lake.
It looks like an ocean, but it's not.
It really does. So let me ask you, for history buffs out there, Jan, what would you recommend for a day or two trip?
I think that would be coming down to our state capital of Springfield and taking in all the Abraham Lincoln sites. So the Presidential Museum is here.
Fabulous.
You have the old state capitol. But during the summer months is a special time to come because they're doing History Comes Alive. And in this time period, they have reenactors. So you might see President Lincoln walking around, Mary Todd. So if you're just out on the street, there's lots of special programming. So from June all the way through Labor Day is a perfect time to come and take in all the Lincoln sites.
Jan Kemmerling, why don't you give us some links to places we can go on the web to kind of get some ideas about some places to go?
Yes, so you can find all our amazing trip ideas on enjoyillinois.com. But we also would like you to follow us on our social channels, which are at Enjoy Illinois. And then if you get out there and start taking these photos yourself, we'd like you to tag them with Enjoy Illinois, with hashtag Enjoy Illinois, so we can then show them on our website.
And quickly, we have literally 2 seconds. There were two different things you wanted me to mention. One was at Brookfield Zoo. Can you tell our listeners in a few seconds?
Yes. So I was just there. So they've got a new exhibit, the Brick Safari, which is 40 life-size animal sculptures that are made from millions of colored Lego bricks. And it'll be there now until the end of September. It's just amazing and good. Great photos.
And Morton Arboretum.
The trolls.
So
my grandson, who's almost 3, went hunting for the trolls, and that was 2 weeks ago, and he's still talking about going looking for the trolls. So it's a good place to get out, experience nature, but you also can do this troll hunt, which is just, it's really fun.
Now we have to go see what you're talking about. Jan Kemmerling.
Yes, you do.
Thank you so much. Enjoy the rest of your Memorial Day weekend, and thank you for joining us. Take care.
Thank you. Happy Memorial Day to you.
To you, too.
Bye-bye.
You're listening to The Karen Conti Show on WGN. Welcome back. We're here with John DeCoste, who's very funny. You know, he's funny all the time. I have to ask you this, because as you know, my father was a stand-up comic.
Yes.
And everyone always expected him to be funny. And he wasn't always funny. In fact, you know, he has downtime where he was just like the average guy. But whenever he was in a group of more than like two people, he felt like he had to be funny. Is that a stress on you?
No, because actually I get the opposite. More people think they have to be funny to me.
Oh,
they think,
yes.
Oh, you're a comedian, so I guess I have to be funny. And it's like, can't we just, like, I don't want to talk about me. I would love to. They think, oh, my job is boring. No, it's not. What do you do? What is a daily? I'm much more interested in what they do.
Well, and my father was the same way.
Okay,
he would ask you about your job and about how your day goes, and he was just more interested, right, in someone else. But maybe that's a sign of a good comedian, because you're always interested in people, because you have to be interested in your audience. And
that's,
I think,
true.
When people don't know their audience and people don't understand and put yourself in their shoes. You know, it's the same as being a lawyer. You know, when I talk to people and they're not understanding me because I'm using big words, or I'm using legal words, or I'm using concepts that they're not familiar with, I have to put myself in their shoes and say, all right, you know, this is the world I live in, but that's not the world you live in.
Correct.
That doesn't mean you're not intelligent.
Right.
That just means you don't speak my language. It's the same when I hear a computer guy, you know, rattle off a bunch of stuff,
yeah,
and you're like what?
Okay, and I push it on where? Where's the on button? Yes.
Plug it in first, and then you go. But okay, so this is an interesting story, and this came out a couple weeks ago, and I sent it to you a couple weeks ago, saying that we have to talk about this on the radio. Conan O'Brien and his production company have settled a copyright lawsuit. He was sued several years ago by a San Diego comedian who is on Twitter a lot. I don't know him. Do you know him? Alex Caseberg is
his name. I don't know him.
Okay.
I know the writer for Conan. I don't know him.
Okay, so this guy, Alex Caseberg, goes on, and he says that he told several jokes. One was about Caitlyn Jenner, one was about Tom Brady, and something else. And so he said that he tweeted these jokes, and lo and behold, Conan told the jokes in one of his monologues, and that maybe he offered Conan O'Brien's writers to buy these jokes, and they refused. And in any event, there was a lawsuit. And Conan says, I'm settling. It settled for $450,000. That's a lot of money. It was set to go to trial, and he said, listen, people come up with the same joke all the time. And he had an example on the same night 24 years ago. He said he told the same joke as Jay Leno and David Letterman all on the same night. And the joke was something about Dan Quayle. And it was like, Dan Quayle announced today he won't be running for president in 1996. However, he did not rule out running in 1997.
Right.
As you know, the idea that Dan Quayle wasn't bright, you know, which was a big, you know, source of laughter during that time.
Yes.
But he said that they all arrived at that joke separately, and it wasn't they were stealing. They couldn't have, because it was all on the same day. Now, let me ask you this. Do you see comedians steal jokes?
Not really. No, I don't. Every once in a while, you can tell. Usually they have a history of it, or, you know, it's not the first time you'll see somebody. We're like the Olympic rings. We're all have our own original stuff, but we cross over.
Sure.
So I totally
Venn diagrams. Is that what those were called?
I think
Remember
so.
Remember in math?
Yes.
That we had the rings and
I
then...
was, again, I was told there would not be math today.
You know, so, okay, well,
okay.
Yeah, I'm a lawyer, you know?
Right, know.
Lawyer sounds like liar, you know, pretty much, right?
but I will see occasionally somebody that has a reputation where they will take a bit that is a famous bit or a bit, and they'll change it.
Sure.
Just enough, and to make it their own. And I'm like, wow, okay. So I don't see a lot of people steal. Now, I was telling you before, my personal story on this one, 1989, I was approached by Richard Jenny. Do you remember comedian Richard Jenny?
I don't.
He's no longer with us, but very funny. Had a couple of Showtime specials and was on Carson and whatever. Richard Jenny came up to me, and he wanted to buy a bit from me. It was a bit I did about an Italian priest. And
so he saw you do it,
yep.
And he thought it was for sale.
Yeah, actually, at that, you could approach somebody and ask them, if hey, I love that bit. It fits me. He was much bigger than I was. So he came to me and he goes, hey, I really like that. I'm Italian. That could fit. I'd like to pay you. And I think it was like $100 he wanted to pay. Well, at that point, I didn't really want to sell it. It was my material. I go, oh, I'm flattered, but no. And it showed up on his Showtime special.
Oh.
And I'm like, wow.
Like word for word, kind of?
Pretty much. It was pretty close. He changed it up a little bit, but it was my bit. And I'm like, holy cow. Because it wasn't in his set. I worked with him just prior to that. So it was not in any of the bits that he had done. But it is what it is.
See, from a legal standpoint, I don't know how you can own a joke.
I don't think you
can. I don't think you can, because if you copyright a book, I mean, your book's copyrighted. You can't quote from it. You can't, you know, without giving attribution, and there's rules about that.
Right.
But a joke is a joke, and if you paraphrase something and you make it a little bit different, there's no violation. That's why I don't understand why Conan settled. $450,000 is far from nuisance value, and maybe he had more to lose because he didn't want to lose it and have people say you're a joke stealer. But it just seems to me that jokes get repurposed too.
No question about it.
You know, you've seen that. My dad used to say there's no such thing as a new joke, just a new audience.
That's right.
And you make it a little bit different, and you know, different presidents you make fun of in different ways.
Right.
And one of the texters from the 262 area code says Robin Williams was notorious for stealing jokes, is well known for that, and that he ended up paying comedians money when he got successful.
That happened too. And Robin, I worked with Robin up in Milwaukee.
Oh,
and,
did you?
Yeah, at the Funny Bone in Milwaukee, which is no longer there. But he came in and could not have been nicer. And everyone warned us that he will take your joke if he likes it. And I didn't care. I honestly didn't care. I'm like, Robin Williams would do my bit. If he thought it was funny, I'm pleased with that. But I go back to what you said. I never would have settled with this guy, Conan.
No.
As Conan, I never would have settled. He tweeted it, so it's out there. Who's to say he came up with it first? How do you do that? On the other side of that, I don't think for a second that the writers of the Conan show, when they go off into their separate rooms when they talk about a topic, depending on how lazy they are, they could go right on, you know, and look and see what they can find on that and see if we can repurpose something. I get that.
It could be the writers and not him. Is that
but
what you're saying?
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Yeah. But how I never would have settled with him, because it's so hard.
So
you tell me, how do you prove it? Your joke.
Well, right. Who got to it first? I mean, and again, some of these jokes, you know, it's kind of a natural punchline in
right.
some ways. I have a funny story. My dad had a friend who was in comedy, and you would know who the guy is. But they were friends, and they hung out together. And my dad woke up one morning, couldn't sleep. He turned on some cable. This was years ago, and saw the guy doing his act from joke to joke to joke.
Oh my!
You know, there was a shtick he did on.
I was just starting though.
Yeah, no, you shouldn't have done
that.
You shouldn't have done that. This is payback. This is payback. I wanted to serve you with process right now.
Son of a gun.
But yeah, no, it's interesting, and I don't think we're going to see the end of this. I think that people come up with brilliant, funny things in different ways, and I don't think you can own a joke.
Setting a precedent here? Doesn't this open up the can of worms now that everybody thinks it's, I tweeted that. I did that. You know, Jimmy Fallon owes me now because I put that out on mass media.
Right.
You know, I had a comic, a good friend of mine, unbeknownst to him, stole one of my bits about 3 years ago. I worked with him and then he did it and he goes, I knew it came to me too fast. I knew that I thought of it too quickly. He came to me and told me, he goes, I'm so sorry, I won't do it again. 2 months later, he did it again at a club, and I had a lady come up to me and chastise me for stealing his material.
Well, I think that happens in music, too. I actually know some lawyers who do music plagiarism.
Okay.
And, you know, you'll have, there was a big one with Lady Gaga, and there was a song. If you listen to her song and you listen to the other one, the other person who wrote it used to work for her, I believe. And so, you know, you heard it, and the words were similar, the music was similar, the beat was similar, and these lawyers will get experts together to say that this is, you know, it's the same tune, it's the same person. progression of chords. It's the same rhythm, and they have like five or six different areas, and they'll say, yeah, this is plagiarism. And then you need to show, like, there was an opportunity for you to have gotten that music
right.
from some other source.
Right.
So maybe you worked together or you heard it somewhere, and people sue for those things all the time and win.
Well, and how about John Fogerty, who was sued for stealing from himself?
Remember that.
He was with Creedence Clearwater, wrote the song. I don't remember what the song was. Then he broke off from them, but they kept the rights. He wrote Old Man Down the Road and got sued because it was too close to
his old one, yeah.
whatever it was, and he lost.
And George Harrison had one.
Yes.
You know, all of that.
Yeah.
Anyway, nothing here will be stolen. I guarantee that.
No.
And actually, it's not funny enough. So I guess
true.
We don't have to worry about that.
I don't think so. I think we're safe.
I'm here with John DeCuss. It's the Karen Conti Show on WGN. And stay tuned. At 8 o'clock, we're going to be taking all of your legal calls on any topic, 981-7200, 981-7200. Karen Conti Show on a Memorial Day weekend. I hope you have some plans for tomorrow. I hope the plans don't get rained out. Hope you have a barbecue planned or maybe a quick road trip or, I don't know, just sleep in at least, right? I'm here with John DeCoss, funny man John DeCoss. I always like having him around because he's just funny, you know? I mean, I can't be funny by myself. It's fun to be funny with someone else.
I just think it's sad you have to say it so much to prove it, to justify it. Otherwise, how would you know?
But I've asked you to look at some interesting legal-ish kind of stories, and I have a little stack over here, and you have a little stack, but I want to know what's in your stack.
Well, let me start off with this one, because this one cracked me up. There was an aunt that went to the 8-year-old's birthday party, her nephew. He was so excited to see her, he ran across the room and jumped into her arms. She fell on the floor, broke her wrist.
Oh, no.
She sued her nephew for $125,000.
Oh, my gosh.
So
wow.
Yeah.
Well, okay, here's the lawyer side of me.
Yeah, that's what
making
I'm, that's...
this not funny, okay. Right? Spoil sport that I am. You know, you see this sometimes because people have insurance, right? And so it could be that the child, by virtue of having parents, the insurance could cover that. So if she had injury that was attendant to this happening, it could be that the homeowner's insurance covered the medical bills and the pain and suffering and all this stuff. So, you know, being sued may not be like, I hate you, you're my nephew.
It's just a way to get...
It's a way to get the money.
To get the money.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. There was a terrible story, and my husband Jerry always hated when I talked about it, but it was a terrible story because a woman was walking and she got hit by a train, and it was horrible, and her body flew and hit somebody and hurt somebody. And the family of the person who was hurt, the woman was killed who was hit by the train, sued the family of the woman who was dead, saying, your body hit mine and hurt me. And everyone was going, how do you sue a family when some woman was hit by a train? Well, you know, there's insurance for that. And I'm sure the guy said to himself, I have a broken arm and a broken leg and I'm missing work and I have a family to support and I don't have anyone else to sue and I'm going to sue that person. Now, again, put yourself in his shoes. Would you do the same thing? I don't know. But people do that.
Well, I guess if you get the whole story rather than just he sued, you know, because of this, you need the full story.
You need the full story. And even then, I'm sure there are people who would say, I wouldn't have done that. You know, I wouldn't have sued.
I don't know how. Well, I don't know.
It seems cold. It seems really cold.
Although I'm suing you today.
Yes, I'm sure.
I mean, that's okay. As long as you know, right?
Karen, it's defendant.
It's the way to get my money.
What, do you have anything else over there?
Oh, and then also this one cracked me up. There was a criminal who pulled a gun on the police officers. The police officers shot him, wounded him, and he is suing them for over $300,000 in medical expenses.
Now that's going nowhere, right? I mean,
it has to, correct? That's a frivolous.
It happens all the time, though, and you know, it's like overuse of, you know, excessive force is probably what the allegation is going to be, that the policeman maybe had a right to shoot him, but did so negligently because he used excessive force. You see those cases brought all the time.
So, as an attorney, do you look at that and go, Nah, I'm sorry. This isn't going to...
I mean, I don't do personal injury, okay, but I wouldn't take that case. Okay. How could you take that case with a straight face and go to a jury? Here you are robbing someone or doing something wrong. You're in the wrong. You put yourself in harm's way. You got a cop out there who has a bulletproof vest on and is out there protecting our city, and you get shot and you're blaming someone else. That, to me, doesn't fly. I would never take that case.
Would a judge look at that and go, why did this even come to court?
Yeah.
Okay.
The judge could possibly throw it out.
Okay.
You know, and they do get thrown out. Yeah.
Okay.
I have this weird one. This is where social media intersects with crime, you know, in a way that I've never seen before. Jose Sims, 29, is somewhere in New York. He has 7 arrest warrants. He's being sought after failing to appear in court on a bunch of things: breach of peace, risk of injury to a child, a whole host of things. And no one can find him. So he said to the police department via some kind of Facebook page, he said, listen, if the post containing his wanted poster gets 15,000 likes, he will turn himself in. So the chief of police said, okay, I negotiated it down from 20,000 likes. So please, everyone, like this page. And if you do, he will turn himself in. That just seems like a perverted thing to have happened, right? The police are asking to like a page so that this guy will turn himself in, like he's really going to obey.
Well, I was going to say, he doesn't have to follow through with this.
No,
they could do
of course.
This whole thing.
What are you going to do? Charge him with fraud?
Sorry, you know, exactly. So it's a weird thing that you would even agree to that. I would say no. Wouldn't you say no? I'm just going to find you.
I think that's what I would do.
Okay.
Yeah.
15,000 likes.
Just disrespect for the law, right? You know, we were talking a little bit about off mic. We were talking about, you were asking me about how do you dress for court and things like that.
Right.
I mean, you know, and that's another thing with respect. Again, you asked me, you know, how does a lawyer dress to go to court? What's appropriate? What's not appropriate? I think it's the different day and age now where people feel like they can wear yoga pants to court. And they feel like they can...
Much more casual.
Much more casual. Yeah. But, you know, I always say the court is a very formal place. It still is a very formal place. You know, the briefs are very formal. You don't say LOL in your briefs. You know, you don't...
Right.
You don't abbreviate. You know, it's a very formal place. And the people in charge are generally my age or older. So the judges are from old school, and they've worn a suit their whole lives. And when they see people in court without a suit, or they see women in, you know, yoga pants or flip-flops, which that happens, or criminal defendants with ripped T-shirts and, you know, sweatpants on, I mean, it's a really bad message to go to court looking like that.
Well, I was going to say, if a judge looks at that, aren't they judging you before they even get to the meat of the...
Of course.
You know.
And, you know, and for all you listeners out there, I mean, if you're ever going to court, whether it's traffic court or your divorce or a personal injury case, whatever it is, you know, look good. You know, the judge will appreciate that you put on a suit. And what's the harm in overdressing? You know, and, you know, I remember I was in criminal court. This is years ago, but it was 26 in California, and it was drug court. And this guy wearing a wrinkled marijuana, you know, the big marijuana leaf shirts that they used to have. I'm like, did you think about what you're going to wear? I mean, did you just pull this out of your closet or actually the hamper? You know, of all choices, why would you wear the marijuana shirt? You know, I mean.
Well, maybe in his defense, he was high.
He could be.
And just didn't know. So
that very well could be.
Do you know of any judges, by the way, because they wear the robe? But do you know of any judges who are very casual underneath?
Sometimes, but usually I see that they do wear a suit under there. Yeah, or at least, you know, a nice sport coat, and women are generally dressed pretty well. And, you know, it's important, I think, to wear, you know, the robe and to look the part for a judge, because even more so, I mean, the judges are up on a bench, and there's a reason for that. It's the sign of respect. They're on a different level. Again, you know, you don't put people on pedestal so much, but you should respect the court. You should, you know, follow the rules, and there are reasons for those rules. And when a judge wears a robe and has a gavel, there's a little bit of a separation between the lawyers and the judge, and there should be. And as much as a judge might want to be casual and be a little less formal, you should call them Your Honor, and you should call them judge. Even if that's antiquated, it's our system.
Yeah, why would you do anything to hurt your chances or make it worse?
Right.
That's what I don't understand.
And something as easy as the way you dress seems to me to be...
it's an easy fix.
And, you know, I had a texter who says a lot of them can't afford nice clothes or a suit. And, you know, you're right, you know, and I shouldn't be that judgmental, but clean.
Yeah.
Okay, how about clean clothes? How about not ripped? How about a little iron going over something? How about not tennis shoes or some... you know, pink on the back of, you know, your butt, you know, or something that fits, that, you know, that your stomach is not hanging out. I mean, really, I've seen all of that probably in the last week in court.
Wow.
You know, so yeah, I agree with you that everyone is, you know, is a dapper dresser, not everyone has a suit and a tie, but if it's really important, you know, you can go down to the Goodwill and you can find something appropriate for a very low price. That's my view.
Oh, yeah. I've seen it, too. So it's kind of interesting. You know.
We are going to be taking your legal calls from 8 o'clock till 9 o'clock, 981-7200. I'm a practicing lawyer. I've been doing this for about 33 years. I will try to steer you in the right direction on any issue that you throw at me here. Anything maybe you have seen in the news that you want me to try to explain. Subpoenas, do you have to comply with them, perhaps, is a good question. Anything in the Jussie Smollett case, anything that interests you, I will be happy to weigh in on. 981-7200, 312-981-7200. I'm here with John DeCoste. Coming up, the stories that matter with Roger Badish from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN. This is the time, if you have a legal question, I'm happy to try to answer it, 312-981-7200. Sometimes it's family law, sometimes it's a breach of contract, neighborhood disputes, those are big ones, employment matters, you'd be treated unfairly by your employer, give me a call and maybe I can steer you in the right direction, or text me, 981-7200. And for some reason, if you don't want to talk on the radio and spill the beans and tell the whole world your problems, you can always call me at the office. It's a confidential line, so don't have to worry about anyone listening besides myself. 312-332-7800, or better yet, email me, because then I can get a little bit more detail of what your problem is, where you live, what county you're in, what you need, when this issue happened, and what your expectations are. WGN at AskKarenConti.com. That's WGN at AskKaren, K-A-R-E-N, Conti, C-O-N-T-I-L-A-W.com. And I get back to everybody. So don't be surprised if I send you an email back with some answers or a link or something. I try to do my best to answer your question because, you know, the legal world is complicated. And sometimes all it takes is just a little bit of explanation and, you know, guiding you in the right direction. Let's see. We have a caller already. All right, let's go. Ready, John?
Yes, I'm right here.
I know that you're going to be answering these legal questions with
me. Yes, I will take all the questions.
Here we go. All right, hi. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show. Oh, Ben, I think Ben's still talking. Hi. Hello.
Hey, Karen.
Hi.
Hi. Yeah.
What's your name?
Mike.
Hi, Mike. Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
What I wanted to ask you, I was about a month ago involved in a collision where another car fleeing from the police ran a red light. Now, the police had discontinued their chase and everything like that. And my question, though, it focuses just on, I understand with, and they didn't have insurance.
I'm sorry to hear that.
Uninsured motorist coverage.
Yes.
And I cracked a rib near my center chest bone and everything like that. And all. Mm. So that's, you know, there's some pain associated with that. I looked up, I saw that sometimes, you know, uninsured motorist coverage will cover pain and suffering. Do you have any suggestions about how a person approaches?
Yes. Okay.
That.
Okay. So let me just explain. If someone is uninsured or they have low insurance limits, there's something you can purchase called underinsured or uninsured motorist coverage. And so what that means is that if the other person is not covered, your own insurance kicks in to pay for your medical bills and the like. The problem with uninsured and underinsured motorist policies is the limit is usually very low. Now, Mike, do you know what the limit is on that coverage in your policy?
I'm not sure. It's probably either $20,000 or $50,000, okay. One or the other.
And that's something you can quickly call. You can either look at the face page. It's called the declaration page of your insurance policy, which you don't always keep and maybe you don't always get from your insurance agent. But certainly a call to your insurance agent will tell you what the limits are. You will look at your medical bills and you would submit it to your insurance carrier. Now, if you have what your issue is seems to be pretty serious, you probably are going to miss some work and you probably have some ongoing medical issues and pain and suffering. So it might even be worth it to hire a lawyer for this. But maybe what you do is you put together your medical bills. I wouldn't talk to anybody necessarily. I'd submit the bills and see what they offer you. And if it's something that's acceptable, take it. But I really think that you should hire a lawyer, especially if the limits are in the $50,000 range, because they're not going to pay you everything that you deserve. They're going to try to pay you as little as possible, because that's what insurance companies do, and they don't want to pay you all of the money that you're entitled to. But at least a personal injury lawyer would be able to give you a range and say, all right, you had a broken rib with this complication, this is what you were off this much time, this is what your medical bills totaled, this is how bad your pain and suffering was, this is about what you'd be entitled to in a fair settlement. And at least you can walk away from it knowing that you got a fair deal, and you have to pay a lawyer a percentage. Usually it's a third. But usually it's worth it to pay the lawyer, because at least you know you're getting what you need to get. And Mike, if you need a referral to somebody, I don't do this kind of work, but I can certainly give you somebody who might be able to help you through this. Okay?
Sure.
All right. And good luck to you. I hope you heal well, and I hope you get your settlement, and it's a fair one.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks, Mike.
Thank you, Karen.
Thank you. Take care. You know, I hate to say it, and people get mad at me, but insurance companies, you know, they're in the business of making money and keeping their money. And if you're not represented by counsel, they're going to lowball you. They just will, you know.
And it makes sense.
You know,
they would. You know.
And they'll even call you up and they'll talk to you and ask you, how are you doing? And you say, fine. And then they use that against you. Oh, you were fine the day after you had your rib broken. You know, so they're not your friend. And if you have any serious injury, you should never talk to an insurance person without counsel, ever. Because they will use that against you. And they'll say, oh, we want to interview you. Well, no, you're not going to do it without counsel there, because they will get you to downplay your injuries. And listen, it's not like I don't make my money doing personal injury, so I'm not standing on that bandwagon. But if you're injured and you're out of work and it's someone else's fault, this is what insurance is for.
Right.
You know, and you should get what you're entitled to and make sure that if you have surgeries in the future or any other, you know, things in treatment and you need physical therapy, why not get it if it's paid for by the person who did the damage? And it just makes sense. That's just the way it is.
So in a situation that Mike had, there was a car chase. Does it matter that the police gave up on the chase, or, you know, would it make any difference if they didn't?
You know, and maybe, Mike, and I should have probably mentioned this, but could a lawyer argue that this guy hit you because he was being chased by the police and the police were somehow negligent? I would guess that that's not going anywhere. That seems too tenuous for causation. Like, did the police cause this guy to do this? You know, he was fleeing from a police officer, so that's a criminal act. I don't see that you would have a right to sue the police department.
Okay.
But, you know, certainly talking to a lawyer about it is a good way to do it. And I have a good group of people who I know, like, you know, if it's in McHenry County or, you know, if it's in Lake County or if it's in DuPage, there's different lawyers for different kinds of cases. You know, some cases the lawyers take only big cases. Some lawyers take a lot of small cases. So they'll take a smaller case like this would be considered a small case, and they settle them quickly and they do a good job. So, you know, having been in this field for so many years, I know the lawyers who do a good job, and so I can refer you. You know, and
that's pretty good.
And that's good. You don't want to pick somebody off of a bus stop bench, right? you just don't.
So that's, the billboard guy's not good? Is
that
what you're saying?
You know, just because they're affording the billboard doesn't mean they're good lawyers. It really doesn't. I'm not saying they're bad lawyers, but that's not how you pick a lawyer, for sure. hey, Craig, in Crystal Lake, how are you? Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hello, Karen. How are you tonight?
Good. What's your legal question?
I didn't have a question. I had more of a quick story for you.
Okay.
When you were talking about dressing properly for court.
Yes.
I have been fortunate enough to sit on two juries and I have been called for jury duty 8 times in 3 different counties.
Goodness.
The last time the judge actually accused me of being a professional juror. But when I was in DuPage County, I was sitting on a jury. The prosecutor had begun his opening statement, and a gentleman walked in the courtroom. He was about 6'3", 300 pounds, wearing a cutoff T-shirt and gym pants pulled up between his knees and his ankles, tennis shoes that were untied. And the judge looked at him, stopped the prosecutor from speaking, pointed to the man and said, "Leave the building."
Wow.
He instructed the bailiff to escort him out of the building. He waited until the bailiff came back, and he asked the bailiff, "Did you tell the guys at the door not to let him back in the building?" And the bailiff said, "Yes, sir, I did." And then he told the prosecutor to continue with the case.
So I'm sorry, what part did he play in this? Was he a witness or was he...
It's unknown. When the judge stopped him from speaking, he just stood there and babbled. He didn't get anything coherent out. And the judge threw him out of the courthouse, actually.
You know, and listen, these are conservative people, and I don't mean conservative in a political way. I mean, this is a place where there's decorum, and anyone who comes in shorts and sandals and does not look polished, I mean, I don't care if you're a witness or a lawyer, especially, you know, you don't want to walk in as a lawyer and someone go like, who are you, the defendant?
Yeah, right.
You know, and
you
I just.
Are in your house.
Go ahead. Sorry.
You are in their house, and that is disrespectful.
You're so right, and it is their house. And the judges, you know, when you walk into a courtroom, I'll tell my students this because I teach law school, and, you know, if it says do not approach the bench or hang your coat up on the, you know, the rack, don't put your briefcase on the table. I mean, look at the rules. This is their room. This is their little area of control, and you have to show respect, whether you like it or not. And listen, why wouldn't you just follow the rules simply to get a better result and get treated with respect in return?
And what you said was absolutely true. The judge will look at you, and he will judge you in the first 5 seconds he sees you. No matter what your case is, he's already prejudged you. Just by looking at you and whether or not he feels contempt for you or not.
That's true. And it's, you know what, it cuts across the board too, doesn't it? With almost any, we all make decisions quickly about people, gut feelings about how you dress and how you do those things. And, you know, you could say it's unfair, but it's the way of the world.
Everybody does it.
It's human nature.
Yeah. Thank you so much for the call. I really appreciate it.
All right. Have a great night, Jim.
Okay. You too. Thank you. We'll be back in a minute. 981-7200. We're taking your calls here, 981-7200. I'm here with John DeCoste, and he's like my moral support. So moral. I put moral in big quotes.
Actually, I'm so glad you said moral and you didn't say funny again.
No, I'm off to something else.
I have a question for you.
Yes.
So I'm a big Cubs fan.
Yes.
Okay. And Ben Zobrist, who plays for the Cubs, has been gone for the last couple of weeks on personal whatever. But now we know that he got a divorce from his wife or is in the process of doing that. But he had to go to Tennessee to file or something, but she didn't. So.
Yeah, interesting. He filed in Tennessee.
Okay.
Apparently, they have a house there. And she filed here in Chicago. They both filed for divorce. And, you know, I don't know if there's going to be a dueling jurisdictional battle, but you see this. This happened. Remember Jesse Jackson Jr.? One of them filed in Washington, and one of them filed here in Chicago, and they had a battle over what jurisdiction would hear the case. Now, you know, and people don't even get along well enough to pick a court, you know, you're in trouble. But basically, sometimes you file, you know, you can file where you live, and there's probably a dual citizenship there.
Okay.
They probably live in Tennessee and also live in Chicago. But I think that a lot of lawyers will choose the place where they think their client might get favorable treatment. So, for instance, perhaps Chicago is going to be more favorable to the wife, and she wanted to file here. Maybe she's entitled to more. Maybe she's entitled to more support.
Okay.
Well, whatever it is, you know. And maybe he felt like in Tennessee, you know, in different jurisdictions, fault matters. In Illinois, fault doesn't matter. So you don't even allege misconduct. You don't allege cheating. You don't allege anything except irreconcilable differences, which just means you don't get along.
Okay.
So, okay. But in some states, your bad conduct meaning you cheated or you are an alcoholic or, you know, there's some issue that caused the breakup of the marriage, sometimes that factors into the financial awards. And Illinois does not do that. Most states do not.
Well, so if they both file in different places, who makes the call that where they're going to, I guess, hear it?
Or? Usually there's a motion to dismiss in one of the jurisdictions, and the judge makes a ruling, and then the other, you know, it's basically a rush to the courthouse. So the probably the first judge that decides that there's jurisdiction will be the one that wins. So I don't know who filed first, but my guess is that's where it's going to be.
I think he did.
Yeah.
I think he did. He left the Cubs to go do it.
Then, unless he agrees to have it heard in the Chicago area. But, you know, it's unfortunate, but you do see that a lot when people think they can get an advantage by being in their home court or in some
But those are the
state.
Only two places that they could have filed, correct?
It's where you reside. It's where either party resides. Now, if there are children, it's where the children reside. That jurisdiction has to determine the children's issues.
Okay.
So it gets complicated, but hopefully they'll sort that out. There's a bunch of calls here, but you know, I want to take one texter. Ed from Chicago says, and this is interesting. He said 911 calls. It used to be that you never heard them, but now they're being released. And his concern was that the victims' families now have to relive these horrific calls, which have to be really just horrible to hear your loved one in distress. And the answer is that yes, they're a matter of public record. They're government records. The open, you know, public records acts in the various states say that freedom of information would probably require that they be released. So they usually release them. Interestingly, when 9/11 happened in New York, there was a battle about that because some people wanted them released. The New York Times sued to get some of those 911 calls. You can imagine how the families wanted to hear them, but not have the whole world hear them.
Right.
So there was some compromise that was reached where the public didn't get to hear the various victims, but the family members were able to hear that.
Okay.
You know, they allowed them. We're going to take a break now. When we come back, I'm going to get to your calls on the lines. I'm going to get to some of your texts. 981-7200, 981-7200. You're listening to The Karen Conti Show. This is Life in the Fast Line.
Lane.
Fast Line. No, it's Line. They can call my number, and it's a fast line. We're going to get you on fast. 981-7200, Karen Conti Show. I'm going to try to get to all of your calls, but if I don't for some reason, it's probably because John DeCoss is here and he's just messing around, you know, just wasting time. You can always call me at my office, 312-332-7800.
Will John answer the phone at your office too?
You know what?
Yes. Yes. Thank you, Roger.
He also makes coffee. It's Keurig, but it's like he still makes good coffee.
Hard to do.
Yeah. He waters my plants.
Yes. Oh, nice. Mm-hmm.
With coffee. With
yes. That's right. Or email me at wjan@skarenconti.com. We're going to try to get to everybody. It looks like Stuart has been waiting for at least 16 hours. Hi, Stuart. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Hi. Thank you. I have a question about intellectual property.
Okay.
I am a over-the-road trucker for the past 43 years, and I'm writing a manual to help new drivers coming out of driving school about the ins and outs, you know, and all the little tricks and everything that the driving schools do not teach you. Now, my question is, does my employer, because I'm a company driver, does my employer have a right to intellectual property? And if so, how can I protect myself?
That's a really good question, and I'm not sure I'm going to give you the definitive answer, because if you look, and you know what you should do is actually you should email me. First of all, I'll give you the name and number of an intellectual property lawyer, and I also will give you a link, because there is a way of looking at whether this is what we call work for hire. So if, for instance, you're working at, you know, if you're working at a car a manufacturer, let's say, and you invent something while you're doing your job during working hours, clearly, almost clearly, you know, that would belong to the company. It would not belong to you, because the company is paying you by the hour to do your job, and part of your job is to invent or to improve things. Now, this seems to me to be something that you're doing outside of the workplace, and that you're not doing it while you're driving, because if you did, you'd be in an accident. So your writing is something you're doing outside of the workplace. But I would want you to speak with a lawyer maybe briefly to make sure that whatever you do and how you do it will be documented in a way that your boss wouldn't have a right to any of the proceeds. Now, there is a possibility of you saying to your boss, listen, I'm doing this on the side. I'm not doing this during work hours. I just want to have an agreement between us that this is mine and I'm going to pursue it. You know, sometimes you ask for permission and then, or you ask for forgiveness, you know, one of those things. So maybe, but I don't know what your relationship is with them. But maybe the safe thing to do would be to get it in writing that you're doing this not as as an employee of your employer. But
would copyright help me in that case?
Yeah, you would definitely want to get that copyrighted. Absolutely.
Okay.
And so why don't you email me, Stuart, and let me see if I can steer you in the right direction. I think that's a really great idea. I think it's fabulous, and I hope you're successful doing it.
Well, 43 years, you know, over the road has taught me a few things.
Well, and you should be able to impart that knowledge in other people and get paid for it. So that's a good thing. Stuart, I'm going to say goodbye, put you on hold, and I'm going to give out my email address, wgn@AskKarenConti.com, KarenConti. That's really exciting. I really like that idea. Let's go to Kamlish. I'm saying your name right. Welcome to the Karen Conti Show.
Thank you for taking my call, Karen.
Sure.
We had made an offer to purchase a single-family home here in Lake County. It was supposed to be a cash deal at $360,000. And they accepted our offer. We had done the inspection, and inspection report indicated some extensive damage to the property, including some smell from the attic and all that. So we talked to our attorney, to the seller, that, you know, there is some significant problem, and we wanted some price reduction. So we asked about $15,000 something, and they asked us for a copy of the report. That inspection report, and we sent it to them through our attorney. 2 days after that, our attorney received a letter from their attorney that they are canceling the contract and nothing else. They, we asked what the reason was. They said, we don't have to tell you any reasons. So my question to you is, do we have any recourse? We asked them at least refund our $460 we spent for inspection. Do I have any recourse to this?
You know, I would probably have to look at everything carefully before I gave you a definitive answer. But real estate, as you probably know, Kamlish, is probably the only area of law where a contract doesn't really mean anything. In that, once you sign a contract and you agree to buy a property, there's the attorney review process. There is the inspection process. And if there's something that you don't like or you see that's at fault with the property or that there's an issue with the property, you can demand, as you did, a reduction in the price. So the question is, because you demanded a reduction in the price, is that what we call anticipatory breach? Was that something that allowed the sellers to say you're breaching the contract because I'm anticipating that you're going to be asking for something that's not appropriate? They're probably taking that position that whatever you discovered was something that really wasn't at fault, and they're saying, well, we don't want to do a deal with you because you're basically trying to get out of the deal ahead of time. Now, I don't know if that's a good argument or not, but you're not going to sue probably over your inspection report costs. Are you out of pocket any other money besides that?
No.
You know, you could file a suit for what we call specific performance, which means they would have to sell you the property. But do you really want to do a deal with these people? Is that something that you want to push, or is that something you're willing to walk away from?
Well, I want to explore my options as to, because we suspect that they're trying to hide something. And they got caught during the inspection report because there was smell of bleach in the attic. And inspector said that they're trying to hide mold or something. And when we questioned about what was wrong and there was possibility of roof leak, And we didn't demand $15,000, but we said that this probably would be our cost to fix whatever it is, according to what the inspector has said, and that's what we told them.
Interesting. So, yeah, I think that you should do two things. I think you should talk to your attorney, and I think you should talk to your realtor, and I think you should decide if it's worth pursuing this. I see what you're saying. You don't want someone else to, you know, you think they're trying to hide something, and you don't like the fact that they try to pull one over on you and might try to do that to somebody else. But you know what? If you're interested in buying property and you want to move on with your life, it may be something you decide, you know what, I just don't want to get involved with these people at all. Because if there was this problem, there might be another problem. And, you know, a real estate contract, as you probably know, is filled with lots of loopholes and ways to get out of things. And before you march down that path any further, maybe you want to just say, let's buy something else. And I guess that's where you're going to end up.
Would it be within our right to pursue and demand $460 for the inspection cost we spent?
Sure. You can do that, and they're not going to pay it, is my guess. But, you know, you know, okay. Yeah, they're probably not going to do it. They're, you know, if they're wrong, if they've done something wrong by not disclosing and then they're trying to hide something and covering it up, you know, there's that real estate disclosure form that they fill out. And if you lie on that about something major, you might want to take a look at that real estate disclosure form. Did they disclose the issue that is that you have in that house? And if they didn't do it, you know, there's a right to sue. But again, what are your damages? And do you want to really bring a lawsuit and spend money on attorney's fees? You might just want to run out of there as fast as you can and go buy something else that you're, you know, where there's good people involved and a good piece of property. But good luck to you. All right. Thank you for the call.
Alrighty.
Very, very
Thank
interesting.
Thank you.
All right. Take care. One of the texters asked me a question. John, you're still here. You're still awake, too. That's really amazing.
No, I was out for like 5 minutes. Sorry.
Okay. All right. Here you are. Okay. So what is the difference between a regular subpoena and a congressional subpoena? And I think that's a great question because we're seeing, you know, we saw that whole issue play out with Congress issuing subpoenas to the Trump administration and different players there. I'm not going to talk politics, so don't get all worked up. I'm not doing it. I'm not going there. I'm not taking the bait. But yes, Congress can issue subpoenas. And generally speaking, the legislative branch of any government, whether it's state or federal, has a right to issue subpoenas because when you're a legislator and you're trying to enact laws, you have a right to know certain things. And if you can't compel, you know, someone to do something voluntarily, then you have a right to issue the subpoena, which either will make that person produce records that you want to look at or come to the court, meaning the Congress, to testify about something, whether it's national security, judicial issues, domestic issues. And there has to be compliance. So, yes, they are as valid as a court-issued subpoena, and there is a process in place if people do not comply. You can have them held in contempt by a court. You can have them held in contempt by Congress. Or, interestingly, you can actually have them held in contempt by the executive branch. But in this case, it's the executive branch who's refusing to comply. So, you know, and there's actually a lockup, I've been told, somewhere in Congress, in the bowels of the Congress, that could conceivably be used to incarcerate somebody who is not complying. But it never happens. It really doesn't.
Plus, I think it's a Wendy's now.
It's a Wendy's.
I'm pretty positive it's a Wendy's.
So you get a Frosty and a slap on the wrist.
To get a subpoena, what's the process to get a subpoena? Who has to approve that?
Well, in a congressional subpoena has to be approved by Congress. So every committee and subcommittee has their own set of rules about how and under what conditions one is issued. So congressional subpoenas, I've never seen one before, but imagine it's a document that is like a court-issued document that says, we, Congress, hereby demand that you produce the following records, and that it's stamped, you know, and then it gets served on the person, and it's served by probably some law enforcement personnel, and you have a certain number of days to comply or to object. And that's how it goes.
Well, okay, going back to the subpoena part, you know, we see this in all movies and TV shows, whatever. They introduce themselves to, they go, oh, in here, you've been duly served. Do you have to do it that way? It has to be handed to them?
It pretty much does because it's due process because you don't want to hold someone in contempt, you know, and you just mail it to them. They'll say they didn't get it. So really, when it's an important document, like when you are filing a lawsuit for the first time, that has to be served by the sheriff. That can't just be mailed to you.
Okay.
You have to have a certain, you know, a certain formality of service to make sure that person has been notified, that there's a certification that the sheriff says, yes, I served John DeCoste at his home, and, you know, this is what he looked like, and this is what I served, and to make sure that if you don't show up, there are some ramifications because you were given your due process notice. So,
oh, okay.
So it's a pretty formal process. We have more phone lines open. Our last segment here, 981-7200, 981-7200. Hey, and if someone wants to call in, I have a little Memorial Day quiz, and it's for valuable prize. Not really that valuable, but it's a prize. And you can call in, and if you're the third caller, you can play the Memorial Day quiz, and you can play against John because... that would be an easy target, I think.
And I have never lost a Memorial Day quiz.
Okay, well, this might be the first. 981-7200. This is the Karen Conti Show on WGN. Sarah, you have a question that I'm not sure I can answer, so why don't you email me, wgn@askkarenconti.com. I'll get back to you. I'm not sure I understand the question, but if you can do that, I can probably give you a much better answer and not embarrass myself in front of all the listeners.
No. Is this the question you wanted me to take?
Yeah, maybe that we should have had you take it. I had a texter, Carol. Hi, Carol, in the 708 area code. I'm not 100% positive, but I thought I read somewhere that Ben Zobrist filed because of some extramarital things on his wife's part. And that's sort of what I was alluding to. I heard those rumors. You know, we don't know if it's true. We don't know if the allegations are true at all. But so like I said, sometimes in different jurisdictions, that could be used in favor of the, quote, innocent party. In Illinois, there's no such thing as fault anymore. So if you don't get along with someone, you don't get along with someone, whether there's infidelity, whether there's drugs, whether there's whatever there is, it doesn't matter. It only matters that stuff. It really doesn't matter at all. Drugs will obviously matter when it comes to custody and comes to visitation and parenting time and things like that. But for the most part, we don't fight about who's at fault because it's going nowhere. That doesn't make sense.
Doesn't
to do
serve
that.
Any purpose.
No, it doesn't. It just makes people more angry than they already are. Right. And you don't need that in a family law. I mean, you need people to come to the table and be nice, you know, to their kids and to get along and to make agreements and to move on with their lives. And once you start that fault thing, you know, it puts people in a very, very bad situation. All right. So we have a contestant in our Memorial Day quiz, and I think Dave is feeling very lucky. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Karen, I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
I'm so excited that you're going to be doing this Memorial Day quiz. I don't know what the rules are. Let's just make them up as we go along. How's that? I'm going to give you a question, and I'm going to let you answer, and then I'm going to have John.
By the way, I just have to say that, you know, I'm a veteran of the United States Navy, and I was in the Seabees. Probably only a few people know what Seabees are.
No, tell me what we did. Yeah.
Well, we're a construction battalion.
Okay.
And you know, it really should not be considered a holiday. Because we are commemorating those who was made the ultimate sacrifice.
And everyone's talking about picnics and road trips and
exactly.
things like that.
It's not the time. I mean, yeah, you could, but know what the holiday is all about. It's not a holiday, but know what the day is all about.
Yes. Thank you. Thank you for that. And okay. And if I cross that line, I apologize to everyone out there. But thank you for your service. And let's do this, okay? All right. If there is a statue depicting a person on a horse... A soldier on a horse, what position means the soldier died in battle? Okay. A, both front legs in the air. B, one front leg in the air. C, all hooves on the ground. Or D, one leg raised. Which one means that the soldier died in battle?
That's very interesting. Can you repeat the multiple choices, please?
Both front legs in the air. One front leg in the air, all hooves on the ground, or one leg raised?
I believe it's one leg raised.
It is both front legs in the air. That means you died in battle. Now, if you had all hooves on the ground, there's no wound at all. And if it's one front leg up, that means you were wounded in battle but died after the battle. So it's very interesting if you look at, you know, the various statues that we have in Chicago, and you analyze that, you will see that that's kind of the rule when it comes to statues.
I never even thought about that.
Yeah. All right, here we go, Dave. And what battle did the Arizona explode, the ship the Arizona explode, killing 1,100 servicemen? Iwo Jima, Pearl Harbor, Anzio, or the Battle of the Bulge? The Arizona, the ship the Arizona exploded, killing 1,100 servicemen.
I believe it was Pearl Harbor.
That was Pearl Harbor. That is correct. 12/7/1941. Highly recommend that if you go to Hawaii, you go on that tour. It's very, very interesting. Very sad, but very interesting. This next question has been called the wall that heals. What are we talking about? The World War I Memorial in Normandy, France. The Vietnam War Memorial in Washington. The line of gravestones at Arlington Cemetery. Or the Korean War Memorial. It's called the wall that heals. Which one of those?
Arlington.
That is not correct. It is the Vietnam War Memorial in Washington.
Okay.
Which is a really moving place to go,
yes,
I'm sure,
yes,
if you've been there. Really, just a really moving place. All right. What were the wars in the United that involving the United States that claimed the most lives? And I'm saying American lives. Would it be A, the Civil War, B, World War II, C, World War I, or D, Vietnam?
Civil War.
That is correct.
Yeah.
620,000 lives in World War II is second with 405. Now, that doesn't even include the number of people who died of disease and other things,
right,
but those were actually in battle,
wow,
which it really tends to claim a lot of people in a war, things like disease and famine and those types of things. All right. Which of these people did not die in war? A, Joseph Kennedy Jr., and when I'm saying that, that's JFK's brother, okay? B, band leader Glenn Miller. C, baseball player Ted Williams. Or D, Bobby Hutchins, who played Weezer on Our Gang. Which person did not die in war?
That would be the Boston great Ted Williams.
That is correct.
That's it.
And he did, though, serve in...
Twice.
He served twice. You're right. And he left baseball. He went and served in World War II, and then he served in the Korean War.
Again,
and he was a hero. But Kennedy Jr. Died in explosives in a plane. Glenn Miller was in an airplane to entertain troops, and he was probably killed by friendly fire.
Right.
I'm not sure he was ever found, actually.
Never found.
And Bobby Hutchins was killed in midair in a training exercise in California. You did a very good job, Dave. You are going to be getting a very valuable prize, and if it's not valuable, you have no recourse whatsoever.
Thank you, Karen.
But I just hold on, and Ben is going to get your contact information, and thank you for serving our country, and thank you for filling us in on the seriousness of this not so much holiday, but a day of remembrance.
Thank you.
All right, take care. John DeCoste, thanks for being here.
Oh, as always, I enjoyed myself. It's always fun. Thank you so much for having me.
Everyone, be careful going home because John's on the road.